Welcome to the St. David's Summer Reading Project. I'm the Reverend Remington Sloan, the rector of St. David's Episcopal Church in Roswell, Georgia.
And I'm Rebecca Klein, St. David's Parish Administrator. The St. David's Summer Reading Project is designed to bring the St. David's community together as we read and discuss books recommended to us by three of our high school youth.
We'll be exploring three very different genres, but from a Christian perspective. We invite you to join in the conversation. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the St. David's Summer Reading Project podcast. We're connecting the parish with books that our youth are reading this summer and the youth who are reading them. I'm Remington Sloan, the rector of St. David's.
And I'm Rebecca Klein, St. David's Parish Administrator.
And today we're joined by one of our fantastic youth, Julia Daniels. Julia, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm Julia Daniels. I go to Roswell High School.
Julia is actually the youth who chose this book for our series. And Julia, we're so excited to read this book. The book is This Is Your Brain on Music by Daniel Levitin. Julia, tell us a little bit about why this was on your reading list and what drew you to this book.
So I'm super into like psychology and stuff. I want to go into psychology. And then I've also always been super into like music therapy and just music in general. So it's like, this is a perfect segue for both of those. They just come together so nicely.
Yeah.
It sounds like Daniel Levitin, who had this incredible interest in background and music in addition to expertise in cognitive psychology. I love it. But what other kind of books do you generally like to read?
I'm a sucker for coming of age books. I love them so much. They're so cheesy and silly, and I love them. And they always have a really happy ending, yeah. And I absolutely love it. So that's generally, and also just more psychology books.
Yeah,
I have a big stack of those. So.
What else are you reading this summer?
I'm reading Solitaire by Alice Oseman and her just whole like Heartstopper series, which I think it's so super cute, and it's a little comic book and I love it. And I'm also reading Circe, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
That's my assigned reading for AP Lit, but I've really been enjoying it, and it definitely does not feel like assigned reading.
No, it's a great book. Yeah, I've read
so
it.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Well, we're excited to be jumping into this book and discussing your interest and your variety of interests, especially in psychology and in music. We love that you chose this particular book. This is our only nonfiction book of the series, which is kind of a bummer. This is, I hope the reader has already had a chance to find out. Still an extraordinary, interesting book and carries its own kind of narrative in addition to downloading all sorts of information for us. Gives us a chance to talk about the psychology of music for sure. This should be fun for our listeners, and so let's just jump in. I wanted to say at the outset that there's a lot of jargon here. World building was a topic of conversation as it related to Dune, that the reader needed to get in quickly and become oriented and familiar with a world that is not familiar to us most of the time, or at least not in the specific terminology that we are accustomed to hearing. And that's probably not that much different for people who aren't familiar with music or psychology who have started reading Daniel Levitin's book.
So one thing I'd like to mention is as you're reading this book and you're coming across songs that are mentioned in this book, there is a This Is Your Brain on Music playlist on Spotify, which will save you a lot of time. Because I kept looking up each individual song on either YouTube or Apple Music, and finally I was like, somebody has had to have made a playlist of these songs.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a playlist. I will be sharing that link in the show notes.
And the playlist is generally, and maybe specifically, I've not followed it closely along, but it's in the order that you'll see these songs appear and reference on the pages, which is fantastic. So
yes,
they'll often be grouped together in conversations about rhythm or something like that. And you can just listen to them in order right there. It's really great. I'm glad that you discovered that. So there is a, I mean, there's a lot in these first couple chapters. If you're not familiar with music, this can be a little bit like drinking through a fire hose. And we just thought we'd have a general conversation about the qualities of music as we started our foray into This Is Your Brain on music. Is there something that you all noticed or stood out to you as particularly interesting about music and the way that we understand music in the world?
I think it's really interesting how it's, I want to say, like the neurons and stuff and how music affects that, and also just like how different people interpret music based on like the level of sound that they like he was talking about the different hertz and things like that, which I think is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yeah, I thought that was amazing as well. One of my favorite parts in the opening couple of chapters is the discussion about the way that neurons fire at the same frequency that we experience in the world through sound that we understand to be associated with pitch. So if you are hearing an A in the world at 440 hertz, that your neurons are actually firing at 440 hertz as well. That's just, it's miraculous as far as I can tell. And I had never heard that before. That's just an amazing feature and great new thing to understand about the way our brains work.
One of the things I found was really interesting is actually in the introduction. Daniel Levitin is actually talking about his experience of being a music producer and how different people hear sounds differently. And I'll be frank, I felt like I was having a conversation with Remington, because as we've embarked upon this podcast and we've talked about sound within the nave, Remington actually hears things differently than I do. And just how our brains can differentiate between timbre and pitch and things like that maybe, I mean, I've always paid attention to pitch, but it was just, it's so complex. And I never realized that sound had so many layers to it. Mm-hmm. And just because we subconsciously process them. But it was really interesting to kind of pick them out. And I've been paying a lot more attention to the sounds I'm hearing as a result.
Right. I really appreciate that Dana Levitin draws parallels to the way that people experience all sorts of different forms of art and things in the universe. Mm-hmm. That some people experience color and light in ways that other people do not, and can really get into the nuance and distinguish between infinitesimally small gradients between one color and another. And other people can really only understand like 16 colors. And that's how it works with music as well. And I'm sure that it works that way with other sensory things, with taste, let's say, and smell, which he points to a little bit also. And so it's wonderful, I think, for us to see the diversity in how we approach these things, and then to understand as well that each of us, even if we don't have as heightened a sensitivity to a sense as someone else does, can approach the sensory experience and develop our understanding of the nuance, and hopefully it enriches our experience of these things as we go along. Mm-hmm. Until, of course, our ears no longer allow us to hear some of the range of music that we would have otherwise, until we lose the flexibility in those little hairs.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was really interesting. And not only do we lose the rigidity in the little hairs in our ears, but our frontal cortex is becoming more rigid as we age too.
Right.
And so I'm curious to see where he's going to take that, because we're kind of on that, when we end where we're reading, which is chapter 4, we're kind of on that precipice of how musical tastes are formed and where we're going just with music and experience. And I'd like just to also mention, is I'm kind of curious to explore as we move through this conversation, music is such a large part of worship and worship styles. And of course, there's contemporary music, there's, medieval church music, Renaissance church music. And it's, how does that kind of, the way our brains process music, how does that elevate our level of worship?
Right. And if we develop rigidity in our understanding of what is expected or appropriate or good even, does that point to some of the challenges we have in trying to create worshipful and meaningful expressions of music within the church, when the church community is diverse by cultural background or age or some other feature? Yes is the answer. I'm going to spoil that one really quickly and go, yeah, that creates some real challenges in the way that we approach music. Yeah. In addition to other sensory things, also art and architecture and just about anything else we could point to. So we all probably have very different tastes in music, all of us, not only listeners, but also Julia and Rebecca and I have different tastes in music, in spite of the fact that music shares all the qualities that were named in the first couple of chapters, pitch and frequency and timbre and rhythm and loudness and harmony and so on and so forth. And we all have brains that are pretty similar from a structural standpoint. So before turning to the next section of the book, we really wanted to kind of take this off ramp and have a minute to talk about what kind of music we like to listen to and what the features are of that type of music. Juliet, maybe we could start with you. What kind of music do you normally like to listen to?
So I listen to a very wide range of music. I really like my top artists, my Spotify top artists have always been Hozier, the 1975, and Nirvana. So those are all three very just very different bands,
right?
But I absolutely love every single one of them. So yeah, just like folk and then rock with a little bit of like indie pop and then also like, I don't know, like punk rock, I guess. Mm-hmm. I've always liked that little mix. So.
Yeah. Very cool. I'm a big punk rock fan as well. I've got plenty of other stuff. I love the idea of pulling up Spotify top artists and top mixes. Mine can be varied as well. I listen to a lot of Australian punk rock. That's if I'm going in that direction, it's Stand Atlantic and groups like that. And then right next to that, as I look at my top mixes for today and my daily mixes, I've got a punk rock daily mix, Queen and Led Zeppelin, musical theater, Jason Robert Brown is at the top of my list, Christian contemporary music, especially old school and on the folk side of that, some classic rock. And then a lot of funk. That's been lately, like progressive jazz to funk has been a fun thing for me. Wolfpack, Hunter Tones, Snarky Puppy, a lot of great groups in there. And then I'm a classical fan as well, so I end up listening to classical in that mix as well. My family kind of hates when I'm in control of which music we listen to because I will bounce around all over the place.
I actually am very much into the adult alternative rock. I listen to Cage the Elephant is one of my favorite bands. 1975 is one of my favorite bands. I love them. But I also have been going down a very deep classical rabbit hole. So when I'm at work, I've been listening to a lot of Chopin. And I love Schubert. He's very pastoral and very happy. My husband and I, we've been watching the Endeavor series, which on PBS, which is a detective series, and of course goes back into Inspector Morse, and they're all connected. And it's has tons and tons of music. So we've actually gotten into Wagner and all the operas, because they always are referring to these operas. And I mean, I've gone down other paths of classical music that I've never gone down before. Mm-hmm. But that is and I do listen to country too. So a lot of top 40 country.
So I'm curious, since both of you have pointed to how the sort of the jargon of describing the detail of music has been somewhat new to you, perhaps, whether or not as you go back and listen to these genres that are in bands and even songs that are your favorites, are you noticing different features about the music that maybe you had not noticed before?
Yeah, when I was going through the Spotify playlist, a lot of the songs were known to me, and I never understood what made them so revolutionary. Like, especially when you start getting to the early rock and roll and the way the rhythms were different and what, like, everybody knows what a waltz is. Well, I don't know. I assume everybody knows what a waltz is because I was trained what a waltz was. The 1-2-3, 1-2-3. So I can pick out a waltz, but I never thought about picking out other things. And it's interesting that I'm relating it to also movement.
Mm-hmm.
So I had never made that connection before of actually listening to something and being like, oh, what is this rhythm? And I've kind of gone down the pitch thing about how pitch sets mood, but I'm definitely paying more attention to it now.
Yeah. I also really like A lot of those songs, I've always really, really liked when songs have like contrasting notes that sound like they should be not together, but then mm-hmm. they are together and it's so perfect. And I love the way he describes that and like mm-hmm. explains why that is the way it is.
Yeah. Very cool. Potentially, in addition to liking different styles of music, we probably all have varied experiences of music in our life. And I wonder if we can talk about that for a little bit. Like, what are your early childhood memories of music? And have there been really meaningful experiences of music in your life?
So I've always been really into music. I used to be in choir when I was really little. I play guitar, all that fun stuff. And then my parents mostly raised me on bluegrass because they lived in Asheville. And I feel like that's just, if you live in Asheville, you listen to bluegrass.
It's mandatory.
Yeah. So
I think it's a requirement to move there.
Yeah. You have to like sign a paper that shows that you listen to bluegrass. So I have a soft spot for bluegrass, like Trampled by Turtles. But that and then all the choir stuff was really important to me because now I do theater. I do tech theater. I kind of transferred over from the performing, but what mm-hmm. originally brought me to theater was the singing and all that. So, yeah.
My musical experience, actually, I actually exist because of music. I am the youngest of four children, and my mother is German. My father was an American soldier stationed in Germany, and he tried to get introduced to her, and she said, "I don't speak English," and walked away. And she changed her mind when she heard him play the piano. And she says, "No, I do want to meet that man." My father was very, very talented. He was classically trained. He performed in a jazz trio. And my father owned a piano store throughout my childhood. And I took my required 10 years of piano lessons, got my 2 gold cups and guild. But my true passion was singing in choir. So I participated in children's choirs. I sang all the way through high school. And just music has been, I mean, some of my earliest memories of music is my father playing for my mother on Sunday mornings. And just hours, he would just sit down. And one of my favorite memories is I was actually working with my father in his store. And it was right before Christmas. This is how I earned my Christmas money. I ran the counter for like guitar picks and reeds and things like that. And it was snowing. And my father just sat down and he played the entire Nutcracker suite from memory.
Wow.
He was just playing for me.
Yeah.
It was great.
That's extraordinary. I grew up in a house that valued music, but in two different ways. My mother loved music and loved listening to music, especially country. She's a big Reba McEntire fan. And who wouldn't be, right? But she also played piano a lot in our household, and that was wonderful. My dad was interested in music for sure and broad musical genres. He loved listening on quality hi-fi equipment. And so I grew up having access to that. And what I really remember is that I was a young child when CD players became accessible to your average household. So I grew up with a CD player and these great speakers in our living room, and I remember putting in disc that had Canon and D from Paco Bell on it, and just remember being amazed by that. And the other was a disc that included Meryl Streep reading The Velveteen Rabbit and George Winston playing what was his album Winter as the background music moving from scene to scene in the Velveteen Rabbit. And my mind was just blown. I thought this music was incredible. And so that really moved me into a place where I would always be appreciative of what music was and its place in my life, but also its ability to create an emotional landscape for me. When I was in high school, I got really involved in church, but very late. And got into Happening, which is a youth retreat and renewal weekend, and started listening to and playing as a guitarist praise and worship music. And for me, everything took off after that, and I'll spare you all the boring details there, but those experiences were really meaningful. That was also around the time that I really started going to live music performances. One of my first concerts was coming up to Atlanta and watching Dave Matthews play.
What a great first concert experience.
It was pretty cool. I was 14 or 15. There is nothing like that going on in Wayne County, Georgia, I promise. So it was a big deal for me. I'll share just briefly one other milestone moment for me. When I was in seminary in New York, I had two other great experiences of live music that moved me into a different spot. One was going to a church for the first time that had really exceptional acoustics and had a paid 16-person choir. I had been told to look for the church to do my internship in where I heard angels singing. And I think that the person who said that to me as advice was giving me advice about the sort of spiritual thing that was supposed to happen there. But I heard an actual choir singing. And I was like, no, those are angels for sure. And I was moved to tears and thought, and so I ended up signing up for my internship like 6 months earlier than everybody else because I just wanted to be in that space every Sunday that I could be there and midweek as well. So that was really amazing.
So we've all had very different musical experiences and we all have actually a fairly in-depth musical experience. Not everybody has sung in choirs. Not everybody has had piano lessons or performed music. And that's really interesting to me and also kind of informs why we're also interested in this book. So one of the things, and I believe it's the first chapter or second chapter that Daniel Levitin wrote about was his experience with the scientist who created the transistor radio, who, FYI, side note, was a science fiction writer also. And the scientist said, give me six songs that describes rock and roll. I know nothing about rock and roll. And I was like, wow, if you had to recommend six songs to somebody, what six songs would you say, these are the six songs you have to experience?
So we have discussed a little bit off the recording what a huge topic this is and how it would take us forever to get through even determining what the six best songs are, most formative songs are in our lives. And so we've narrowed it a little bit as we might discuss instead the way in which the neurons that are associated with music are also connected to memory. We really started to get into a different conversation, which is kind of our earliest or most meaningful memories of music and the songs that are associated with that connection, and the way that sometimes just hearing a song can take us right back into that place where our memory was formed with that piece of music. Julia, what's a song that does that for you?
Okay, so Love My Way by the Psychedelic Furs. I absolutely love that song. I love that song before this, but this was back in 2019. It was spring break, and I was going to China with my theater, and we were going over there to teach and learn. And I'd only ever been on a plane like once in my life before when I was very little. I did not remember. So it was me and then one of my best friends in the entire world, Stevie. We were sitting next to each other and we were like holding hands because we were so excited and just like so nervous and so ready. And I was like, okay, I have to listen to a song or else like this plane ride is going to be terrible. So I listened to Love My Way by the Psychedelic Furs. And I even like when I still listen to it now, I can kind of hear like the plane noises. And I listened to that for like an hour straight on the plane. And so now whenever I hear that song, I just think of like the excitement of like me and all my best friends just like going to China. And it was so exciting and fun.
So, that's so cool.
It is cool.
Rebecca, how about you?
So it's actually a piece of music. It's Handel's Water Music. And so whenever I was going through a really tough time, or my father would always say, you need to go put on some classical music and, you know, let it take you where it takes you. And my go-to was Handel's Water Music. And my father had passed away, and it's been 16 years now. And about a year after he passed, I was sitting in Hotel Roanoke's lobby, and they had a grand player piano. And it just automatically started playing Handel's Water Music, and I just burst into tears instantly because it took me back to the music therapy side of things. You know, for my parents, music was something you connected to, and it just kind of represented that kind of surrounding and support. And I associate Handel's Water Music with my parents.
Nice. All of my memories probably that I would access for something like this would be much shallower than that. But I have very vivid memories of a couple of moments early in my childhood. I've got memories of singing Alabama in the car with my mom. But the memory that I'm most attached to in this moment is my first exposure to Led Zeppelin. I had a friend named Adam Harper in elementary school. I had just moved to Jessup, Georgia, and he was one of the friends that I had been able to develop early on there, new kid in school, and I was always very nervous about all that. And every time we would talk about music, Adam was one of those kids who would say, "You've never heard of this," and then make sure that I was exposed to. And I had for all of my musical experience, missed out on things like the Beatles. And so Adam was responsible for introducing me to the Beatles and to Led Zeppelin. And I remember vividly listening to Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven for the first time and becoming sort of obsessed with that. And I can access that memory with the ability to sort of vividly remember the room that I was in, almost what I was wearing, and sights and smells and all sorts of other stuff going on. The feel of the carpet that we were on. It's really incredible how seared into my memory that is.
I actually had that when I was in Germany with New Order. I remember listening to the New Order, like, Greatest Hits album, and it's funny that you said that. I was like, oh my gosh, I do have a similar memory. I can still imagine the room, the lighting, everything. It's funny. I can even smell the room. Interesting.
Very cool how that works. Levitin spends a lot of time talking about the way that our brain works. And I know that is similar to the first couple of chapters talking about the way that music works in terms of its jargon. And there is a level of almost expertise that someone has to have to have access to or approach some of the depth of this. But he makes it accessible, which I appreciate, that we have all these neurons in all of these different places in our brain that light up, so to speak, when music is being played. And the idea that those would be attached to one another in ways that are also associated with memory and specific tactile or other sensory memory is pretty incredible. I also love the way that he described the way that those neurons have different ways of connecting to each other, such that we end up with this really amazing resiliency or neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. It's extraordinary how our brain works and what a gift that we can access the world around us in this way.
Something else is he actually kind of delves into the philosophy of Aristotle and John Locke and how we use our senses to make sense of our reality, but yet it's also flawed. I found that to be really interesting. Something else I found really interesting in the early chapters of Levitin's book is he talks about how music has recently kind of evolved into more of a consumerist activity than a participatory activity. You know, with the rise of American Idol and these other competitions, mastery has become paramount, and we can feel intimidated about participating in music if we are not at a certain level or of a certain mastery. And I have to be honest, I think that's a sin in a way, because if you think about how participating in music activates all these centers of our brain and it elevates us to a certain place, to really enjoy and embrace music, we have to be willing to participate in it. And especially when it comes to worship, by not engaging in singing the hymns or being reluctant to engage in things, are we holding ourselves back from fully embracing a total worship experience?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, one idea is that you've been given this instrument in your voice or your being that is designed to play, and to withhold that is harmful to the collective whole. At a practical level, one of the things that I think about as you say that is that we have considerably fewer people in the church building on Sunday morning than we might have in the past. And when it comes time to do congregational singing, people can hear their own voices reverberating in that space and are more self-conscious because we have developed this cultural desire for a level of expertise to get into the game that, again, if you're not of the quality that can be on American Idol, then it's not worth hearing your voice, which is frankly just kind of dumb. But we've gotten to that place. And so I've experience, and I've only known this congregation in this format, but I've experienced already the shrinking back of some people's voices because of the self-consciousness in the space where they hear their own voice, whereas with 300 other people, they might have been lost in the crowd. There are some people that break through that, and I'm really grateful. As I look at Julia, one of the things that I remember is that last Sunday, there was a song that the other 100 people in the space were not singing, but the three youth on the front row were singing and dancing, and it carried the emotional weight for the rest of the room. So thanks for that.
So for those of you who are not aware, Julia, tell us a little bit about your Happening experience, because Remington's mentioned his, but I don't think our listeners are aware of your involvement in Happening.
Yeah, so I happened first like 2 weeks before COVID started. So I like had this whole like amazing Happening experience and everything shut down. And then I did like online church. And then this past fall, we started Happening up again and I was on team. And I really felt called to apply to be observing rector, and I got the position, so I'm going to be rector in the fall.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're very proud of you.
Which is just in its own jargon, the rector of Happening is the kind of central leader and organizer of this experience for the other youth. So all the other staff members, for instance, will kind of report to you. It's an incredible role.
Yeah. And I just absolutely, I love Happening. I love Camp Michael. I love all camp activities. I think they are so fun. And also like with music, camp songs are my absolute favorite. Mm-hmm. I love singing camp songs and we all just absolutely belt them and dance along. And it's so fun. I love it.
There's a place where, while I appreciate the broad brushstrokes that Levitin paints with in discussing that cultural movement, I have not experienced that people hold back from participating in music in every context. It's only in certain contexts. At camp, people who can't carry a tune in a bucket will sing their faces off or at Happening or something like that because it's okay. And in my own household, we've got people of... So one of the things that I think may be a way of understanding this is that we, as a church, have a responsibility to facilitate the building of emotional and community space in which it's okay for us to just let go and let our instrument do what it wants to do. Because as you've experienced at camp or at Happening, when we can do that, the emotional and spiritual connection is so amplified for the participant.
Because mm-hmm. we're engaging all of our brains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if we don't allow ourselves to open up to those opportunities, it's an experience denied. But so just so you know, I will sing often very loud in church and I'm usually sight reading and I will make mistakes because sure. I have very bad timing. I will tell everybody up front and I keep going because it's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for all of it, there are amazing people that will find ways to be comfortable making mistakes. And the 745 congregation, where there might only be 45 people in that room, and there's no choir, no band, it's Sue on the organ. Sometimes Susie will come in upstairs and sing in the choir loft. But there are a couple of people in that congregation who maybe don't love to sing in their day-to-day lives, and they go for it because it's important to them spiritually. And because they believe in grace well enough to know that we're all making mistakes all the time anyway, and that shouldn't keep us from responding to God's movement in our lives.
Oh, which actually brings me to the word dynamic, which is movement. One of the things I thought was really interesting about the chapters was the principle of, not the principle, but the discipline of physics called dynamics. And I'm married to a mining engineer. My brother's a civil engineer. We talk about dynamics with concrete all the time, which, by the way, is not as stimulating as this conversation. But I never thought about the science of dynamics applied to music. And that, to me, was a revelation. Just the sound waves and, like, the transference of energy into the brain is the same. And we were having a conversation about sound panels in the church and how when the sound waves hit the panels, it turns into heat. And for some reason, I never thought about it. And how cool is that? It is just cool. So if we can't look at the science of dynamics and think, okay, we have principles of physics and not expect it to affect our souls, mm-hmm. it's it's a beautiful melding of science and religion to me.
Oh, for sure. For sure. One of the fun things in my world, being particularly sensitive to this from time to time, is to leverage that understanding to help either somebody else understand or experience what's happening, let's say, in a space, or just trying to solve for certain things. So trying to solve for the way that sound reflects off of a wall, you can replace the sound with light, and it works the same way. Wavelength will be different.
You're blowing my mind.
But the wave would be the same. And then thinking in terms of fluid dynamics, if water can get from one room to another, sound can get from one room to another. And so if you're trying to do sound deadening in a room, but you leave a big crack in the bottom of your door, guess what? You're going to hear plenty of stuff on the other side because the sound waves are going to find their way through. And sometimes that is an easier way for people to access what's going on with the sound in a room. It really is just fascinating.
Well, it's also employing another one of our senses to make sense of our surroundings. Mm-hmm. Because you think about it, sound is invisible, so we can't imagine it, but you can picture water and you can see light.
Mm-hmm.
It's
really
interesting to think about it. So again, sometimes reading this book is like having conversations with Remington, just saying. So as we start wrapping up our conversation today about the first four chapters of This Is Your Brain on Music, I'd like to kind of talk about what we're looking forward to learning in the next section of our discussion, which will actually take us from chapters four, what we expect from Liszt and Ludacris, to what makes a musician, my favorite things, why do we like the music we like, and the music instinct.
You want to talk about what we're anticipating and expecting?
Yes. Mm. We.
I like it.
But what are you looking forward to, and what unanswered questions do you still have that you're kind of hoping you'll get from the second half of the book?
I'm really looking forward to, I'm seeing chapter six, Music, Emotion, and the Reptilian Brain, which is just so many words at one point. And I really like, as pre-mentioned, music therapy, so music and emotion, but then also the words reptilian brain, because I never really think of like reptiles and emotion really going hand in hand. I'm pretty sure that's not what he directly meant, but I find that an interesting title. So I'm excited for that one.
I like that there's a connection between that and our conversations in Dune, that we had a number of conversations about sort of rising above the reptilian brain to become more human, so to speak, and like the way that music will tie those two things together. Mm. We could have a whole separate thing about Gurney Halleck and the Balisette too, but we'll try to avoid that.
Ooh, I'm actually looking forward to section eight, My Favorite Things, Why Do We Like the Music We Like? I find that really fascinating, and I'm curious to see what we'll discover there. And also, Chapter 7, What Makes a Musician? Because my father was so talented. And by the way, my mother also taught herself the guitar, harmonica, and the piano by ear. Like, she taught herself. So she was also very musically inclined. And my father always said, oh, Rebecca, you could have this talent too if only you practiced enough. I did not have that talent, nor did I practice as much as I should have. But I'm kind of curious to read that, because if you read, you know, what is the name of the book by Malcolm Gladwell with the 10,000 hours?
Is that Outliers?
Outliers, that is. It's Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, where he talks about any mastery is 10,000 hours of practice more than talent. And I do believe that to be true to a certain part, but when it comes to music, not exactly sure.
I look forward to reading chapter 7 as well, and within the context of that, I'm looking forward to maybe having a conversation with Sue Wallace in particular, one of our own musical geniuses in the community of St. David's, and having a discussion with her about what expertise looks like in her life, as well as her understanding of some of the features of this book. I look forward to taking a look at a golden thread that's in this book that Daniel Levitin mentions from time to time, but doesn't name so explicitly, which is the way that evolution is part of the backdrop for how we developed our sense of music and the way in which we developed a brain that can experience sound and music in these ways. I think he's probably going to do a little bit more with that in the second half of this book, and look forward to seeing that. I think that's a fascinating area of discovery as it relates to sensory experience and how our brains developed the capacity for understanding music, as well as morality and religion and a number of other features that are common to our experience today. So we look forward to being with you as we get into our next episode.
And until then, go forth into the world to love and to read.
We hope you've enjoyed this conversation and that you have new ideas to explore, and that through these ideas you might grow closer to God and to the St. David's community, especially our youth. In the show notes, you'll find resources that we might have referenced today.
If you have any thoughts or stories that you would like to share with us, we invite you to email them to Rebecca at info@stdavidchurch.org. We look forward to hearing from you.